Welcome to the SDA Housing Podcast, brought to you by NDIS Property Australia. Before starting this episode, we need to provide a general disclaimer. Information contained in this podcast is general in nature only. It does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. You need to consider your financial situation and needs before making any decisions based on the information in this podcast. And you should consider seeking independent and professional advice for your personal circumstances. All right, let's begin.
Hello everybody, my name is Min and I'm your host from NDIS Property Australia, and you're listening to the SDA Housing Podcast, a show that explains, highlights, guides and brings awareness about all things SDA in this ever-changing NDIS world. Today we have a repeat guest speaker, Mr. Paul Grant from Axis Lending. Paul, how are you?
Good, thanks Min, nice to be here again.
Wow, mate, you've flown over twice now to Brisbane. Mate, today's topic is SMSF lending. Now, this is a very complex topic and a very complex transaction. And I guess I'm recording this because it helps listeners listen to it again and again and again to figure out what does it all involve. Because this is it's a very complex process, isn't it, Paul? Paul, where do you want to start here on this topic? I want you about to feel free to unleash or unload your burden of SMSF lending to our listeners so that they can spend time absorbing this. So it saves you time to repeat, explain all this topic again. But allows our listeners to listen to it, absorb it, listen again, think about it, try and give as much information so that they have less questions to ask you when they come along to the table with you eventually down the track, please.
Magic. Wonderful. Thanks, Min. Yes, SMSF NDIS lending came about a year ago, roughly, and in construction stage. Now, the listeners that are aware, an SMSF historically could not do a construction loan under the Act. The lender has formed a relationship with a third party who acts as a conduit between your client and the lendor to go to contract with a vendor and a builder on your behalf of your client. They will go on title, they will handle the construction. They also do a contract with your client upfront that upon completion, the client takes over ownership of the property and obviously the loan to pay out the third party. They then have themselves an SMSF NDIS property.
Okay, so that's a 3-minute summary. Very nice. Thank you very much. But let me pull back a little bit, Paul. To begin with, an SMSF cannot go out and borrow money from a bank, correct?
Correct.
So you can't do that.
For a construction loan.
Correct. So you need to engage another company to do that for you. That's because the ATO says, as per the CIS Act, we can't allow you to do that to protect your interests. That's number one. So you got to engage someone else to do that. Number two is you have the right balance of funds in superannuation to do an SMSF house and land purchase for NDIS. Paul, what do you feel is the appropriate average or minimum balance in SMSF bank account cash to be able to even talk to us about this topic?
Okay. So yes, bearing in mind minimum deposit is 20%, and bearing in mind construction stage and possible vacancy period upon completion of the property.
Oh, wait. You also have to mention the additional premium to be added to the package to cover the costs incurred by the third party.
Correct. So, roughly, your client is going to need, depending on purchase price, I would suggest $350,000 as a minimum. You probably can get away with a bit less, definitely not under $300,000. And the reason why, because as well as the purchase price and the 20% deposit, there are bridging costs associated with the transaction. You are having to pay the third party who is doing the bridging for you a fee for their service, their costs for doing the transaction. You could be looking at $40,000 or $50,000. You're also prepaying 12 months interest. Again, similar type numbers. So $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 over and above the purchase price, over and above your 20% deposit, is where you're probably getting that $350,000 mark as a safety guide.
So we'll get to that in a minute. So what Paul is saying here is, if I was a third party person and a client came to me and say, hey, but I need some help. I can't do this on my own. Can you do this for me? I, as a third party, would say to you, well, are you asking me to borrow money from my bank to buy the block for you, to build the house for you, incur stamp duty, interest costs, solicitor fees, land tax, whatever the costs may be, at my cost, which I'm going to pass on to you. So, Paul, I guess where I'm going with this is a lot of times investors always say, SMSF investors always say, why is there 150 grand uplift here? Well, that's the reason why, isn't it, Paul? Yeah, so do engage a third party to do this for you. It costs them a lot of money, and they're merely passing that back on to you as the end buyer, being your SMSF. So before we go to a case study scenario, Paul, what else should our SMSF listeners be aware of before they begin this journey?
First thing is they've got to have an SMSF in place, okay? You can be someone with a private policy. You've got to convert that, or if not all of it, enough of it into an SMSF to get this transaction rolling. So you have to have that established already. That's the key to be able to move forward. The loan application is not dissimilar to doing a normal NDIS loan application, as we spoke about on a previous podcast. It is a 6 to 8 week process. But the key factor to be able to move forward is SMSF established, available funds sitting in the cash management account of the SMSF to be able to pay your deposit and costs at settlement. And that's that land settlement.
Gotcha. Has your organisation, Axis Lending, done many of these SMSF deals?
Yes, it is a growing market, Min, with a lot of investors historically who, due to interest rates and other economic factors, can't buy investment properties or an NDIS investment property outside of super because they're already heavily geared, etc. Inside of super, they've got this cash sitting here that's they're looking for an alternative means of making the return. These are limited recourse loans, so the client's personal loan history does not come into it. These are standalone agreements. We still need to see income. We need to see they're contributing to a fund to allow for possible vacancies later on, but these are self-servicing loans.
So the income, meaning the SGC of their salary going to super, plus the rent from the property to show the internal serviceability of the SMSF lending, right? Yeah, gotcha. A question I'm sure investors will ask you, and I've asked this question to you this morning and you've already answered it to me, which is great. So I know how to answer this question, ask this question to you now. Devil's advocate, okay? We have two houses side by side. One's 900 grand, one's $1,050,000. 150 grand difference. Sure, to the buyer. Surely there's going to be a valuation issue in this matter when there's two houses side by side, identical, but one is SMSF, one is normal. Correct or not?
Are they both NDIS? Or
yes.
Both NDIS? No, it's going awkward question because it all.
Let me jump. I'll give the answer which you told me earlier, which is most of the additional cost is a cost payable by the SMSF to the third party, not part of the contract.
Yes, so the borrowing costs and the interest charges
is separate.
Over and above the purchase price for an SMSF, whereas on a normal transaction, the client pays them themselves up front.
Yeah, so there's no shortfall under 50 grand because those costs are not part of the contract.
Correct.
No. Yeah.
They're both worth 900. The other one's just got the built-in costs added to it, yes.
Other than that, it's pretty much a standard SDA home loan, pretty much, isn't it?
Yes, and then the key factors are obviously contributing to the fund is important, making sure your fund's got enough in it to allow for vacancy once it's finished. May not get a tenant day one. And obviously you'll do your due diligence with your accountant. This is the right way for you to go. You will need to prepare a bear trust because the bear trust is the custodian of the property. If you have five SMSF NDIS properties, you need five bear trusts. Because the bear trust is property specific. Your client's accountants or financial advisors will be able to help them with that. And obviously there will be a contract between the client and the third party regarding the on sale. That contract is given to the client for them to peruse and their accountant, lawyer, etc. as they seem fit to make sure it's right for them.
Paul, I want to highlight to our listeners The difference between this transaction and SMS lending to the other podcast we did recently about normal lending is two things that stand out. Number one is this third party is a proxy for your SMSF, correct? Number one. Number two, it's a deposit of 30% and that's it. No interest payments, no drawdown payments at all during the process, correct?
20% plus costs, correct. And those costs are inclusive of 12 months prepaid interest.
Yes. So around about 30. Yeah. So if you're a normal mum and dad buyer buying in this property, you're paying interest payments on the construction loan, the drawdown payments of the build costs, and that's an ongoing cost every month there. Whereas in this scenario being the SMSF, most of it, all of it's prepaid in advance as a big lump sum, to the third-party proxy who handles everything on your behalf. And once it's complete and finalized, then there'll be a settlement, isn't there, Paul?
Settlement, transfer of title, payout of that third party, and then you'll take over that loan as a normal investment house loan with normal monthly repayments.
Paul, I want to hand you back a document of this case study here, which you have there. Do you want to run through these numbers to show where the price was, numbers were as a two-part contract, and then all the additional costs add, plus, to make it the final pricing and what the cost of deposit payable to that third party is at the very start and at the very...
So you want me to do the exact numbers?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, so this is a package in WA. Land price, $430,000. Build price, $582,000. I would presume that is a three-bed, which is a two-participant plus carer, high physical support.
Whatever the numbers are, just we're talking numbers.
So that's a total $1,012,000.
Yeah.
Interest charges for 12 months, estimated to be $44,600.
And that's based upon an 8.24% rate plus buffer?
Correct.
Which is assuming a 12-month build time frame there.
Yes, the NDIS rate's 7.49, but they put a higher rate in there to allow for RBA increases. And they've also got to allow for the time it takes to construct if there's any delays in that. Their costs, holding costs, admin costs, etc., there's another almost $50,000. So those total costs over and above the purchase price is $94,400. Total package price, purchase price plus costs, $1,106,000. So there's a $1,012,000 initially, plus those costs. Total the client's going to pay $1,106,000. 20% deposit, $202,400.
Question, that 20% deposit is based off the new price or the old?
That's based on the initial house and land package price.
Of $1.012 million.
Correct. Cool. That's correct, because the other costs are not part of the value.
So we basically quarantine that 94 separately on the side. Okay, gotcha.
You can't borrow against that. It's not part of the lending ratio.
Mm-hmm.
$202,000 deposit plus your $94,000 cost to get in. At land settlement, you will pay $296,800
to the proxy.
To this charity, yeah, who settles the block of land. Nothing more to be paid. 12 months later, 11 months, 10 months, depending on the build time, it's time to settle. It's time to take over. You will pay stamp duty on a new house. Stamp duty on this property worth $1,012,000 is $38,700. Your borrowing costs, roughly $5,000. We can go into more detail later. So there's $43,700 that you're adding to the $296,800 you've already paid. So total payment, $340,500. Majority up front, stamp duty and borrowing fees at the back end.
So basically, $340,000 is the total outlay from this SMSF on the original purchase price of $1.012 million, 34%, 35%.
Yeah.
Okay. So there we go. It's an outlay of, well, two outlays, the big outlay at the very start and the small outlay at the very end, which is the stamp duty. It's about 34-35% total. Yeah. Okay. So there you are. On a million purchase, it's 35% there, $350,000, $340,000 down. If you're going at a lower price, being $850,000, there'll be pro-rata down there. But again, Paul, your organisation does the quote for this, doesn't it?
Correct. And I can supply this quote to the clients. We do every time. As long as we know a house and land price, this quote can be documented and given to your clients to make sure they're happy with what they're doing and want to proceed.
Gotcha. Now, the process of an SMSF loan process is more longer. Do you want to explain break down the time frame?
Yes, it is a bit more,
why so long?
It's a bit more complicated because we've got a third party also involved in the transaction.
Might I add two layers, if not three layers, of lawyers here too, by the way?
Yes, vendors, lawyers, third parties, lawyers, and the client's lawyer need to peruse documents. So the order, the process of how it will work is your client would come to me to see if they qualify for an SMSF loan. The key point is funds in the bank. If they've got $200,000 in an SMSF, they're not going to go anywhere very quickly. So anything over that 350 mark, borrowing capacity is not a problem because these things self-service. What happens next? Client will go away with the help of their referrer, their partner they're working with, and come back to me with a house and land package via an expression of interest. I need to get that client's loan conditionally approved so that your client knows that the lender that we choose and use is going to support them. that conditional approval is given to the third party. The third party signs the expression of interest because that's the document used by the vendor and the builder to go to contract. And their contract is with the third party. It's not with your client at this stage. So that's where a little bit of time is taken, several weeks, a couple of weeks to get client's information in, to get those details off to the lender, to get the conditional approval back, that off to the charity for them to sign the expression of interest to then satisfy the vendor and the builder that it's all proceeding. After that's done, so the contracts are prepared, the charity, third-party charity they are, they sign contracts, they get their finance in order, proceed to settle on land and build. Your client and I then sit tight, client pays their deposit and fees at land settlement. After they've perused the contract, third party prepares and gives to them for the on sale. If they're all happy with that, obviously they continue. If they're not happy, their client's accountant and or lawyer and the third party's lawyer can have some conversations about clauses if need be for clarification. Once all sorted, deal is done, settlement happens, your client sits back, as I do, and we wait to be notified when the property is approaching completion. We then get back together, formalise their loan application, update some documents from what we initially took 10 months ago prior, put the application through, knowing it's going to be approved because it was already conditionally approved, to prepare to settle with the third party to take them out, pay out their finance, take possession of the house and get some tenants in.
Now, Paul, in relation to our previous podcast where you spent some time talking about serviceability, vacancy and everything else, I just want to go back to this little case scenario here that you just mentioned, TM, that the $1.012 million purchase, the $340,000 outlay for deposit and settlement costs. Now, I would recommend our listeners, if you're an SMSF investor, buyer, have buffer in your SMSF bank account because, as Paul mentioned earlier, there's going to be some vacancy period. Vacancy requires payments of the loan if it's empty. So have that assumption there, number one. Number two, there could be a requirement for partial or full furniture packages in your property, potentially. 15 to 25 grand there. In addition, there'll also be costs for procurement of participants and engagement of provider. Paul, you agree? So all up there, we're talking 25,000, 20,000 interest costs there. It'll P and I, won't it? Yeah. So we're talking 60 grand, 70 grand there, right? So right there, 340 grand is the payment, but your balance in super should be at least 400 grand plus in this scenario here to make sure you cover all those costs in the future. Now, obviously, if you're in high income, you're getting your 10% SGC contributions going from your employer. Great. If you have extra cash, you make contributions as an undeducted contribution to super. Great. The point being is you need to have money in your SMSF fund post settlement to cover these additional costs because there's more costs than just the construction costs, completion costs and post-settlement costs as well. Just want to add my two bits there, 2 cents worth there, Paul.
Very important, Min, and I'd like to explain exactly what this is going to cost the clients so that they know that there's no waking up in a year's time, oh, we're short, we allow for this and we educate the clients that this is what it's going to be now, it's what's going to be needed in the future. Are you happy and comfortable with what you're doing that you've got this covered?
Paul, any more words of advice, pearls of wisdom, forecast predictions, whatever you want to call it, do you want to outlay to the listeners now before we hang up?
Look, do your research, again, location, where you buy, what is the demand, your providers and referral partner you're working with, they should be able to give you statistics on this. How much debt do you want to have? Financial advice from your accountant and, bear in mind, I have two accountants. I have one accountant that does my personal stuff and one that does my SMSF. Everybody's experts at different things, so make sure you seek the right advice. And you obviously ask the questions to get the answers that you need to make sure you're making an informed decision because it is your future that you're looking at.
I have a question for you, Paul. This is more of an age bracket, pension phase investors versus, pre-retirement age. Is there an age limit? If a person had enough money in their superannuation, like $500,000 in the bank in super, but they were 59 years old, would the lender take their age into consideration given the fact that their working life is limited? You know what I mean?
The technical answer, I mean, is there's no age discrimination. client must be working. They must be contributing to super. If all things go pear-shaped one day, the property is sold and you presume the debt is repaid. There's no desire or want to chase a client personally for any outstanding SMSF debt. So age limit is, the answer is no. Contributing to super is yes. And having sufficient funds in your super for a rainy day to handle vacancy periods and one-offs that may happen is the key. If you are in pension phase, you can't do it. If you've got the cash to buy one, go ahead. You can't borrow if you're in pension phase because you're not contributing to your super anymore. That is the lender's policy, whether it's the lender's policy.
Gotcha. And also lastly, look, with these kind of complex transactions and third party lawyers, your lawyer, lender's lawyers, a lot of in between red tape here, expect delays, expect challenges to get the ball rolling because it ain't going to settle quickly. Correct, Paul?
Correct. And the more the accountants, financial advisors and lawyers understand what we're dealing with here with NDIS, construction, third party bridging finance, the better it is. And unfortunately, people don't always like clauses in contracts and they're put there for a reason. But open and frank discussion is had early to nail out any queries that I had regarding those contracts. But that tends to be where the delay is obviously lawyers exchanging contracts and putting in clauses and taking out clauses.
Yeah, gotcha. I understand. Well, mate, thank you so much for your time, Paul. Really appreciate you helping us explain to our listeners more about the intricacies of SMSF lending when it comes to SDA property. And hopefully in the coming few months, we can do a live webinar just to present to our listeners on a live webinar more of a calculation breakdown, like what we covered today as an example, but more of a visual presentation on a Zoom call. How's that sound, Paul?
Well, Goodman, nice to be here, and I would certainly welcome the opportunity to help your listeners wherever I can.
Done. Thank you so much, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you are subscribed and following us so you can keep in the loop with all of our upcoming episodes. We would really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a written review, and to share this podcast with those that could benefit. Until next time, catch you on the next episode.